Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Friday afternoon, April 4th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. The Cubs open their home season today. Wrigleyville packed with fans. We'll cover the business of baseball in our next segment. But right now, Wall Street, of course, deep in the red today as China strikes back with fresh tariffs on American imports. At the same time, a surprisingly strong report offering a glimmer of optimism suggesting the labor market remains on solid footing, at least for now. Joining us on the Village Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Gus Fauché. Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Gus, you're all over this radio station today. You're talking to us. You're talking to CBS News. You are in demand. And unfortunately, it's not because of an entire slate of good news. But let's start with the good news, and that is the March employment report, which came in better than analysts had expected. And what sectors fared the best in the month of March, according to the government?
We saw a solid increases in education and healthcare, and that's been driving a lot of the recent job growth. Leisure hospitality services, so restaurants, recreation, travel, those types of things. And that's an indication that consumers are continuing to spend. And then we also saw decent job growth in retail trade. Again, another indication that consumer spending is holding up in the spring of 2025.
And now we have the announcement of new tariffs on goods from basically all over the world. Certain countries get more. Other countries are starting to retaliate. The reason why the markets are selling off today is China announcing new tariffs on American goods. Now, these are just announcements. Some of them will be implemented soon. What should we look for as the tariffs take effect? Because their effects and what we will see, they're not going to happen all at once, but you'll start to see it gradually over time.
That's right. I think, first of all, we're likely to see higher car prices. We've seen a 25% tariff on imported cars. That's already in effect. And I would expect that we'll see car dealers start to raise their prices fairly soon. And then it's going to spread to all sorts of other goods. I think we'll see big increases in apparel prices. The countries that produce apparel have been hit hard by tariffs. Imported foods, I think, are going to see higher prices. And so it's going to gradually spread throughout the economy, but we will be noticing it in the prices of many of the goods that we buy as consumers.
And the one thing that has been powering the economy through inflation and interest rate hikes has been the strength of the consumer and the strength of the job market. Again, we had a strong number this morning that defied analysts' expectations on the good side. But when should you and when should we start to worry if you start to see signs of deterioration in the job market?
Yeah, you know, the job market has held up well, and initial claims for unemployment insurance have stayed low. So, you know, we will be very closely watching the job market over the next few months. We have seen job growth slow since 2022, but it's still solid. But if we start to see job growth dip below 100,000 per month, then I think we start to get more worried about what that means for consumer spending and the overall economy.
Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh, thank you for joining us today. Coming up, the revenue machine that is the Cubs is in high gear on the north side today.
Compounding your interest with an economy of words, this is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
As the Cubs host their home opener at Wrigley Field today and is one of Major League Baseball's top revenue generators, many Cubs fans are asking, where is all that money going? Joining us to discuss the business of baseball and this Cubs home opener is Mark Gannis, president and co-founder of Sports Corp Limited in Chicago. Mark, thank you for joining us today. And no, this is not sour grapes from a White Sox fan. This is commentary I hear from the Cubs fans in the newsroom. I see online. You hear it on 670 The Score that the Cubs are one of the biggest draws in Major League Baseball. And yet when it's time to sign the gargantuan free agents, it's always the Dodgers and the Mets walking away from the table with the prize. So why are the Cubs always a bridesmaid in the marquee, no pun intended, free agent sweepstakes?
Well, there are a few reasons. First, let's remember that the Cubs actually did make a lot of business moves to sign players and make long-term deals back when they first took over the team, when the Ricketts first took over the team, and they won a World Series. That's what the new ownership for example, the Mets are trying to do now. The numbers have just gotten staggeringly larger, and that's what Steve Cohen is trying to do. He's basically trying to do what the Cubs have already done, which under new ownership, win a world championship and create a competitive franchise and change the perception of the team. Now, why is it, where is all the money for the Cubs going? You know what? The people have actually seen it and enjoyed it. There's been a very significant upgrade to the entire stadium and the surrounding areas. All of that was paid with private money. No public money went into that. So they actually are seeing a lot of that money all around them in the upgrades of Wrigley Field and all of the work that's been done in the neighborhood around it, in just bringing Wrigley Field up so that it's not a dangerous place to watch a game. And now that project is done, but it was a 9-year project that took a ton of money. So now let's look to the future. Now the Cubs fans can say, what about now? What about going forward from this point now that all of that has been paid for? And so I think starting next year, they could say that and then look at what's happening with the RSN, with Marquee Sports. Is it going to keep getting carried? And what's happening with cord cutting? And will they have the money from local broadcasting, which is a problem all throughout baseball? So as I said, a lot of the money is actually, they see it and they feel it, because a lot of it went into the Wrigley Field renovations. Now that that work is all done, now they can ask the same question beginning next year. And unfortunately, the regional sports network business kind of stinks right now. And so we'll see how much money there will actually be next year.
And you bring up a very good point about the deterioration of the regional sports network model is not just a problem for the Cubs. It is a problem for all of Major League Baseball. I mean, just look at the ongoing dispute between CHSN and Comcast about carriage in the Chicago area. So you could watch the White Sox or the Blackhawks or the Bulls. But I think when you look at the Dodgers, and this was always a belief that I had, there was a small window of time, 14 years ago, when a number of teams, when it became obvious that time shifting was disrupting the broadcast television model, a number of teams locked in high dollar, long duration agreements with cable companies mm-hmm. to carry the games. And these were billion-dollar deals. The Angels, the Dodgers, the Houston Astros struck when the iron was hot, and that has become a sustainable source of revenue, which has allowed teams, especially like the Dodgers, to sign those marquee free agents. I mean, that became a very big piggy bank for them.
Rob, you are absolutely right. The Cubs could not do that at the time because they were locked into the deal with Comcast Sports Chicago with the White Sox, the Bulls, and the Blackhawks. So they were not able to do it at that time. But you were absolutely right. The teams you mentioned took advantage of that cycle and are in far better position today than they otherwise would have been. And then you add the Ohtani factor to the Dodgers in particular, and that has given them enormous resources to be able to go out and sign additional players. And the Ohtani factor is not just that he brings in tremendous revenue from Japan, but also that he agreed to take a massively deferred contract. He only gets $3 million a year, and the rest of his contract, the $700 million contract, is deferred for 10 years. So he's not going to get that money until after, and that was just an incredible gift that he gave to the Dodgers. I don't know how many players would give that to their teams. And on the Steve Cohen with the Mets, he bought the team for roughly $2.5 billion, and he knew he was buying a mess. So he knew he had to pay a lot of money up front in order to change the narrative of the team, make them competitive in the hyper-competitive New York market, and that's why he's had to put out so much money. And the good news from his standpoint, he has it. So he can do it, and that is part of why he's been spending the money that he has. But Rob, you're absolutely right about the cycle. The Cubs were just unlucky that they were locked up in Comcast Sports Chicago, and were not eligible to make that kind of deal at the time the Dodgers and the Angels and the Astros did.
Mark Gannis, president, co-founder of Sports Corp Limited in Chicago, thank you for joining us today.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
When stock market losses, well, they're rattling portfolios right now, but they could also be rattling relationships. Joining us to discuss how couples can avoid letting money fights sink their future together is Shane Gornick, financial advisor, Forefront Financial Planning in Lyle. Find him online, preparemyretirement.com. Shane, this is something we talk about quite a bit, that maybe 85% of your job is actually being the armchair psychologist, and the other 15% actually involves investing in dollars and cents. So how many phone calls have you been getting over the past couple of days from people who are just freaking out right now?
Oh, just one or two, Rob.
I'm sure they're getting a busy signal right now as you're talking to me.
I've had to clear out my voicemail a few times in the past 48 hours or so. So it's been fun.
Now, I think we preach patience on this show and we talk about time horizons, but if you hear that the Dow is down 1,000 points or the NASDAQ is down 6% and you start to wonder about your own investments, you wonder about your own financial well-being, how should you approach this? And more importantly, how should you approach this with the other important people in your life?
First off, it's important to help not let each other get too down about what's happening. It's hard to keep an even keel when things are good or things are bad, but there's a saying I'm a big believer in. It's attributed, I think, to King Solomon, basically it's this too shall pass. So when things seem really bad, and this is whether it's in the market or just in general, but particularly in the market, when things seem really bad, they're usually not as bad as they seem. And when things seem really good, don't let yourself get too excited because they're not as good as they seem. And the more you tell yourself that, and you know, your spouse, you tell them that as well, and they're telling you, the easier it is to kind of help get through it. It's very easy with all the sensationalism going on with what's going on in the market, and it's legitimate to be concerned. But for most people, by the time you decide you want to do something, unless you do this for a living, it's usually too late to make any kind of move that you're wanting to make anyways.
And then very quickly, Shane, it also doesn't help, you know, living in the social media era where there's just so much stimuli being thrown at you thanks to your phone, because you have social media videos that are talking about economic conditions and some of the political conditions that may be responsible for it. And on top of that, if you go through FinTalk, you might have people who have access to Bloomberg terminals just shooting all sorts of charts and graphs at you without any context whatsoever, and that can certainly ramp up your anxiety.
Exactly. That's a big thing that people don't realize, just how big of an impact that has, and not just social media, but media in general. And so we recommend trying to compartmentalize whenever possible from the economic news from daily life. Of course, we would put as an exception Rob Hart midday on WBBM. But other than that, turn off the radio. Don't watch TV. At least where it's going to show financial networks, and try not to let it interfere with your day-to-day life.
Well, Shane, it's a good thing that in times of trouble, I can always turn to the White Sox to make me feel better. Oh, wait. Shane Gornick, financial advisor, Forefront Financial Planning in Lyle. Thank you for joining us today.
Whole nother story, Rob.
Find him online. Do we have 7 hours? His website, preparemyretirement.com. Thank you for joining us.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber. Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. It appears the rain will stay away as the Cubs open their home season at Wrigley Field. The U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services reversing some of the job cuts that were announced earlier this week. It's Entrepreneur Friday. We'll meet the co-founder of a Chicago-based online platform dealing in collectible spirits and wines. And the price of oil plummets. We'll check in with an industry expert on what it means for drivers. WBBM Business. The markets are lower. The Dow is down 4.4% or 1,798 points. The NASDAQ is down 5%, 858. And the S&P 500 is down 273. 48 degrees right now in Chicago under cloudy skies. It's 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour, the Cubs are holding their home opener on the north side today. First pitch about 50 minutes away. Cale Venom is the team's senior vice president of ticketing.
It is unique that this is our third opening day, in a sense that we opened in Japan. We had our domestic opener in Arizona, and now we're opening here. But I think opening in front of your fans is just a really, really special day. And, you know, we have the best fans in baseball. They've been dying to get back to Wrigley Field after a long winter.
The Cubs are hosting the San Diego Padres, who are undefeated. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is acknowledging that some pink slips that were issued by his department this week were mistakes.
The Department of Health and Human Services lost 10,000 jobs Tuesday. Kennedy says 20% of those jobs will be restored.
Personnel that should not have been cut were cut or reinstating them, and that was always the plan.
Kennedy says Doge and the administration knew they would make mistakes.
And one of the things that President Trump has said is that if we make mistakes, we're going to admit it, and we're going to remedy it.
Kennedy says some of the health studies that were cut will also be revived. Michael Wallace, CBS News.
It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Stocks once again trading sharply lower on Wall Street. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Jay Hatfield, CEO of Infrastructure Capital Advisors in New York. Jay, thank you for joining us today. And those Chinese tariffs are certainly speaking louder than the March employment report when it comes to how investors are feeling today.
Yes, thanks, Rob. It's great to be on. So you're right. That's really what destabilized the market, was the retaliation from the Chinese. And so really, this isn't just an increase in tariffs, but it's turning into a tariff war. And that's why the markets are starting to price in a recession and are down over 5% today.
And then just taking a look at how this is going to play out going forward, you would imagine that China is only the first of many countries to impose retaliatory tariffs in response to what was announced later this week. And it seems like if there are more countries coming out with more retaliatory tariffs, chances are we will have more days like this going forward before we reach some sort of equilibrium.
Yes, that's right. Although it's always important to recognize when there is a disruption that there's usually a policy response. So the Federal Reserve, they haven't indicated yet because they're usually behind the curve, but they're eventually going to figure out that this big tax increase, because tariffs are really effectively a domestic tax increase, is going to reduce consumption and slow growth. So the Fed could cut. The Senate and the House may take away tariff authority from the Trump administration. And certain countries like Vietnam, I don't think this is going to be widespread, but could try to negotiate both sides of the tariffs down, like, in other words, cut their tariffs or eliminate them and get the U.S. to eliminate tariffs. So there is always a policy response, but if just the same situation persisted, then you could continue to see these stock market declines.
It seems like there's also a larger conversation to be had just about free trade and what it means to Americans and to American consumers, because I'm seeing two very distinct flavors of reaction to this in the economist and the analyst community. I mean, there are some people who think this is necessary. They think this is this was a necessary step to ensure that American companies and American manufacturers do not get the short end of the stick when it comes to global consumption. And then there are other people who they sound like Ned Beatty in the movie Network, that we have meddled with the primal forces of nature by imposing these tariffs. Is the truth on one pole or the other, or is it somewhere in the middle?
The way I would look at that is that the former camp, in other words, the pro-tariff camp, probably has a point, but that doesn't mean you need to do average 30% tariffs for your trading partners. So too far, too fast, disrupting the stock market, disrupting business operations, causing close to a tariff war. So there's no reason that we couldn't have had bilateral discussions, no reason we couldn't have phased in these tariffs. There's no reason to come up with bogus calculations of what the tariffs are of other countries that make no sense to anyone except, I guess, the administration. So it's really the implementation of it that is the real problem. Having 5 to 10% pretty widespread tariffs would not be that disruptive. And we're going to get a lot of price increases, so consumers are going to be angry pretty soon. That's why Congress may intervene.
Jay Hatfield, CEO of Infrastructure Capital Partners in New York, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Entrepreneur Friday, a Chicago auctioneer dealing in rare and collectible spirits.
Money talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday, and it's 5 o'clock somewhere. So today we're talking to the co-founder of a company launched in 2020, dubbed the Real Real of Wine and Spirits, helping collectors buy, sell, and store rare bottles. We welcome in Phil Mikhailov, co-founder of Unicorn Auctions, in business now for 5 years, based in Chicago. Phil, thank you for joining us today. And I said, you know, it's 5 o'clock, quitting time somewhere, and why not unwind with a bottle of rare Pappy Van Winkle bourbon? And I would imagine there are some that you could find through Unicorn Auctions.
I love it. I love it. We got about 4,000 of them in auction right now, closing this Sunday. So Your all of the audience could definitely get a bottle of Pappy or whatever they like to drink.
Now, how did you get into this particular area of auctioning? Now, you have tech experience. You worked at Uber. You were at GoPuff. Where was the moment you said, like, let's start doing this rare and collectible wine and spirits auction house?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. The wine and spirits world is just very elusive, and I felt like it's hard to learn about. And all other collectibles are fun and kind of easier to get into. And so I always had this thing that stuck with me of how can you make it easy to discover, buy, trade, sell spirits. And the antiquated way of doing it was auction houses and walking into, liquor stores and trying to learn about it. And I really wanted to have an emphasis on how do you build a modern experience where people can come to one platform to buy, trade, sell, or digitally vault their entire collection and see everything in one place.
And for the, if you don't know, it seems like the best of the best when it comes to scotches or bourbon or certain types of wine, you can't find them in the store, and that the only way to really get them is through the auction process.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think, everything's allocated or stores can't get stuff. But the reality is, I think what Unicorn is about is its access and transparency. And there really are thousands of bottles out there, but it might just not be in that corner liquor store. And so we make it very easy to have a platform where, you know, it's the largest platform in the U.S. now, where you can come and get your most sought after bottles or everyday drinkers like a Maker's Mark or a bottle of Beam or anything like that.
And the price range, bottles going from $100 to $250,000. So what's a $250,000 listing on Unicorn Auctions?
Last year, we sold a bottle of Yamazaki 55. It is one of the rarest Japanese whiskeys ever sold. We also set the bourbon world record last year for a bottle called a Van Winkle Sam's 20 and a Binney's 18. These were exclusive single barrel picked 20 years ago. And the crazy thing is that bottle of bourbon originally was $69.99 on the shelves at Binney's, and 20 years later it sold for $110,000. But while those bottles are expensive, I think that's actually, you know, one unique thing about Unicorn. But last year we did close to 100,000 transactions under $100. And so really focusing on, you know, getting people what they want at every price point. And for someone, their unicorn might be a tequila that they can't get in a store, a birth year bottle of wine, or it might be the crown jewel that they're trying to add to their collection.
In under 5 years, you have become the largest spirits auction house in the U.S. and top three in the world. What explains the growth? I mean, obviously, you would say it's because of the processes that we have set up, but clearly the market has also become rather robust as well.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is really rooting ourselves in creating the best customer experience. And this really, you know, providing the access and transparency and the various price points just tapped into a community that existed out there, but there was not a centralized place where everyone can come to one place. And so COVID happened to be a great accelerant for our business, where traditionally everything is brick and mortar in the wine and spirits world. But we were able to, you know, accelerate that incredibly fast and see, you know, be on the forefront of that digitization of wine and spirits.
Phil Mikhailov, co-founder of Unicorn Auctions in Chicago, opened in 2020. Thank you for joining us today on this Entrepreneur Friday. And still to come, the latest on prices at the gas pump.
It's the only program dedicated to currency events. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The price of crude oil takes a dive, marking its steepest drop in 3 years amid new tariffs, raising questions about global economic health. But what does it mean for drivers? We welcome in Phil Flynn, senior market analyst for the Price Group in Chicago. Phil, thank you for joining us today. And oil now trading at $61.89 a barrel. That is a steep drop from the over $70 we were talking about on April 1st. So oil traders are making their bets on the future health of the economy. But when you go to the gas station, what can you expect in the not too distant future?
You know, I think you're going to see prices come back down. It's going to be like an early Easter gift, you know, from the Easter Bunny, right? You know, because usually right around Easter, prices are surging, right? Every Easter. And they've been going up lately here in the Chicago area with the switchovers to the Chicago blends of gasoline. Prices have been going up. And so what it means is that they're probably going to stop going up. And instead of, you know, that normal 10 to 15 cent a gallon jump that we normally get, it might only be 5 or 7 cents. So prices are going to stabilize. And, You know, I am, you know, usually when prices go down like this, I'm the first one to say, watch out, it's because of a bad economy. But I don't think that's the case this time. I think prices are going down because of a readjustment in the economy. And even though the stock market looks terrible, it's not about the economy. It's about trying to figure out who's going to win from tariffs, who's going to lose from tariffs. And there are going to be winners. And as soon as the market gets that straight, I think the stock market's going to come back. But I still think we're going to see lower gasoline prices.
And we have been we have had this conversation before, Phil, because there have been some times where oil dropped by a lot, and it was based on the predictions of an economic slowdown or maybe an economic slowdown in China or elsewhere in the world. And as a result, drivers were the beneficiaries of those pessimistic plays. So as you point out, it's a prediction, and we don't know yet if that prediction will come true.
That's absolutely right. And if you look at the economic data we're getting, you know, the doom and gloom about the economy is misplaced. I mean, the non-farm payrolls today were blockbuster. And if you look at the manufacturing jobs, you know, we're seeing the manufacturing job increase unlike anything we've seen in years. So maybe some of these policies are already working, because we're seeing manufacturing in the U.S. grow at the fastest pace we've seen in years. We're seeing jobs come back. And if that's a trend that continues, then this you know, tariff trade war thing, you know, is going to be well worth it in the long run.
And then very quickly, Phil, if this oil price route continues, when does it not become worth it for oil producers to drill for oil?
You know, I think if we get much lower than we are now, it's going to be more difficult, right? But at the same time, you have to balance that with the fact that other countries' oil imports are going to be more expensive. So that's going to make U.S. oil cheaper. Now, if you add to that streamlined regulations for the U.S. oil and gas industry, they're going to be able to respond a lot quicker to higher prices than other countries. So that's going to give the U.S. producer an advantage. So I think it's going to make it a lot easier for these companies to produce at lower prices.
Phil Flynn, Senior Market Analyst with the Price Group in Chicago, thank you for joining us today.